as a head coach, what he needs to get is to get the third and fourth line as dynamic as they've been to make sure that they will put chances on their side.
But if there's anything we learned about last year, it's a good start. It doesn't really mean much if you're not able to finish it off. So we're just trying to get better every day and, another chance for that tonight.
From the morning show here on TSN 690 with Connor McKenna, Sean Starr, and Rick Moffitt, François Gagnon of RDS, and, of course, Brendan Gallagher, who's on with the boys every Monday morning. If you miss it earlier, it's always on. Brendan Gallagher's always on at 9:35, either live or replayed at 9:35 on the morning show on TSN 690. Welcome back to Melnick in the Afternoon on TSN 690 on game night, Habs and Flyers, with Rod Francis and Mitch Gallo. Mitch Melnick until 7 o'clock. Sean Campbell will take over from the rink at 7. Face-off just after 7:30 with Dan Robertson and Sergio Momesso.
Michael Farber on Melnick in the Afternoon, brought to you by Wrangler's premium performance cool vantage jeans. Don't sweat the job. Do like Carey Price. Choose Wrangler's cool vantage jeans to be cool and stay cool.
Just off the set of The Reporters, where he always is on Monday in Scarborough, now at the airport in Toronto, ready to come home. How are you, Michael?
Yeah, I'm doing great, Mitch. I'm excited. What an interesting week we have with this World Series, big hockey game tonight for the only team in the NHL that hasn't lost in regulation. Yeah, things are pretty cool.
Yeah, we'll get to the World Series in a couple of minutes. So let's start there. I mean, a year ago at this time, the Canadians were, what, 5-0, right? They weren't 4-0-1. They went to 9-0. Interestingly enough, they will have played 9 games in the month of October, so we could match it up by the time they finish up against the Leafs at the end of the month. What do you sense? What is your early feel about this team?
Well, you go back to last year, and one of the things that they had going for them early on was production from the bottom 6 forwards. I know François Gagnon alluded to that, but they were getting this kind of play from guys like Flynn last year and players on the bottom 6. Now, we saw the other night against a beaten-up Boston team, Dano scoring, and Flynn, and these are the kinds of things that you look for. And this is what was happening early on. It wasn't just the top-line guys who were playing well. And then gradually things fell apart, starting with that game on the Friday night against the Rangers in the Garden, where the Rangers were really good, the Canadians were really good. They'd lost by that point, but it was still two really good teams. And Lundqvist against Price. Well, Price gets hurt in that game. Lundqvist gets pulled, and the Canadians won. And that, to me, was the moment when things started going south. We haven't had that moment yet here. I don't expect we will necessarily. I don't think the schedule has been that tough. But one thing we can look around the league and say, who's your super team? Is there one team that jumps out at you? And I don't see that super team apparent. And right now, Montreal's as good as anybody in the league.
Well, unless you count the Edmonton Oilers.
Well, I kind of do, because I had two Canadian teams make the playoffs. One was Montreal, one was Edmonton. I didn't mind waiting 2 hours for Connor McDavid. Edmonton's waited, what, 20-some-odd years? So an extra 2 hours. Can you imagine a game in Winnipeg being delayed because of sun? I mean, if he told me mosquitoes, I would have said, yeah, that makes sense. Sun, really?
Well, that's what used to happen at Jerry Park, you know.
Sure. No, the outfielder couldn't see the ball. What was it, a 10-minute break they used to take?
Yeah, they used to have to wait 10, 12, sometimes 15 minutes for the sun to set behind the bleachers in left field, yeah.
Yeah, no, that was different. I, for one, suffer from outdoor fatigue. I've only been to one game. That was Montreal, Edmonton, and
sorry. You mean outdoor NHL fatigue?
Yeah.
Okay, because I thought you were an active
fatigue.
Kind of guy.
I go take walks and stuff. You know, I'm not like Woody Allen who hates the country because there's no place to walk. I mean, you know, I
didn't even know. Rod and I did not know that there was an outdoor game until late last week.
Really? Okay, because the NHL has pushed it, but you know, you can barely, you know, step outside without a puck hitting you from an NHL game. It's just become so prevalent. It's funny about the outdoor games because they're based on a false premise that these guys played hockey outdoors. No, they played pickup hockey outdoors. They played shinny.
No,
they
didn't.
Messed around, but they didn't play for 2 points.
Most of them didn't.
No,
but that's the honest generation, the previous, they didn't. We did.
This is an indoor generation. This
yes.
is an artificial ice generation. This is not playing on the rink, and so essentially, you know, this is a faux nostalgia, and I think the NHL has done a nice job of selling it, and I think teams or cities have bought it. Last time I checked with the league, and it's been a while, but at that point, 23 teams had asked for outdoor games. And in Montreal, it might be a little difficult. Bob Gainey was pushing for this when he was GM, and that was going to be held in Olympic Stadium, which
was ridiculous.
Indoor-outdoor game.
That would have been ridiculous. I was very happy to hear Jeff Molson say there's no outdoor game on the horizon for Montreal. If you're going to do it properly. Don't Olympics. It's a cash grab anyway, right? That's
right.
What this is for both
yeah.
sides. It's a cash grab.
And I will say this: players really like it because they buy into it, and it's also a 6-month season, and it's a little bit of a break. And especially if you're the home team, you know, family comes in, you get to skate on this outdoor rink on the day before, and if you toss an alumni game in, that's cool, and so. Players actually like the experience, and people who go to it tend to like to because they're not expecting a hockey game. They're expecting an event, and more the NHL has become an event-driven league, perhaps to its detriment, but there you go.
All right. Part of the kind of sideshow to the Canadiens' good start with Shea Weber, I believe he's leading the team in plus-minus at +6. I could be wrong there, but he's definitely up there. And, you know, Nathan Beaulieu being schooled as his partner, learning how to play top-pairing defenseman. The analytics crowd, even before he set foot in Montreal, took aim at Shea Weber and talked about how vastly overrated he was. And to start the season, the same kind of verbiage is being directed towards Shea Weber in particular. What do you make of this? Where he's obviously, if you're watching the games and you're around the team, you can tell that he is making a positive impact. And if the people who study these numbers continue to point out how bad he is.
Well, he passes my eye test to this point. I don't love everything I see. A lot was made on the hit he made against the Coyotes the other night, Tobias Reeder. Knocked him into the boards. Remember that hit?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, big hit. Well, what we don't remember, I guess this was last Thursday, was it resulted in an odd man rush going the other way because he was out of position to make that hit. So, I like what I've seen from Weber. He's a good player. He's been a good player for a long time.
We started. Michael, you're breaking up right there. Hold on a second. Hold on.
Yep.
Okay, we got you again.
Okay, I like Weber. There's certain things he does very well, including shooting the puck and clearing the crease. There are other things he doesn't do as well with some other people, including the first pass sometimes. He jumps into holes in the offensive zone. That's nice. I don't think that gets talked about a lot. They didn't trade PK Subban for a bunch of pucks. This guy's a quality defenseman. It's interesting, though, when Bergevin using the defense about all these smart hockey people saying, well, we got to have Weber as a backbone of Team Canada, and he's on the first pair, and I guess we're all wrong and everyone else is right in kind of a huffy way. I take you back to the 2010 Olympics and the selection of the USA team, and they allowed, what was it, Sochi? Help me out here. They allowed, I guess it was Sochi, they allowed Scott Burnside into discussion.
Yes, right.
Yeah. And this was my takeaway from that. And Scott Burnside and Kevin Allen of USA Today and Scott Burnside from ESPN.
You're talking about the Brian Burke comments?
Well, no. Yeah, that was part of it. But if you go back to all the stuff that Burnside wrote, and he wrote a lot, it was really good. You never heard these GMs bring up anything involving analytics. These are the smartest guys in the game by reputation and by resume, and analytics never factored into any of their discussions. So what you have here is a schism between the decimal point people and the eye test people. And if you look at the advanced math, maybe it's not as pretty, but the people looking at the game say, yeah, this is pretty good. But that was my big takeaway from not the Bobby Ryan comments made by Burke, but the fact is analytics never factored into the decision-making in building Team USA in 2014.
Mitch?
Well, I'm just wondering, who do you think makes Carey Price's life easy? Easier, I should say, when you look at the trade between Weber and Subban, because you mentioned the things that Weber does well and the things that PK does well. Who do you think Carey Price prefers to have in front of him?
Well, I haven't asked Carey Price, but you like the safety net of that kind of defenseman. But if you look a little further, you like a defenseman who moves the puck quickly. I mean, there are all kinds of ways to approach the game. And you can turn back two decades and see how...
Yeah, you're breaking up again, Michael.
Okay, I'm going to try to stop moving. The Philadelphia Flyers in the Stanley Cup Final, instead of going muscle on the top Flyers line, the Legion of Doom, they used the puck-moving defensemen Lidstrom and Murphy against them. So there was a benefit to that. I think the more interesting question now with Carey Price is with Al Montoya's top play, how many games do you really want Carey Price playing this regular season?
55.
55, I think, is a good answer. Carey Price might say 65. But if Carey Price is healthy and fresh for the playoffs, I think the team is better off. We've been thinking a lot about Jacques Demers this week, of course, and Jacques handled Patrick Waugh a certain way, whatever Patrick Waugh wanted. And you would say, gee, whatever Carey Price wants might be the way to go. But I think it might be the Price's benefit if 55 is the number.
And just before we finish up with the World Series in terms of the analytics, and you know, I'm an old Bill James disciple. I think he should be in the Baseball Hall of Fame. I always have to qualify what I'm about to say by pointing that out. I think 5 to 10 years from now, everybody's going to look back and say, what we were arguing about is ridiculous compared to what we have at our disposal today. That's where I think this is going.
That's fair. That's fair. Hockey analytics really are in their infancy, and it depends on how you use them.
Who are you rooting for? You're rooting for Terry Francona? And,
I am.
Okay, go ahead.
I am, because, you know, if the Cubs win this, you know, I can see them morphing into the Boston Red Sox. And the Boston Red Sox are a great team, but they no longer are the team with the narrative that we so love to talk about. I mean, the Red Sox, we don't talk about the Red Sox failures anymore and the heartbreak. You know, we talk about this team that spends all kinds of money and is expected to be there every year. I can see the Cubs becoming that kind of franchise. I think the Cubs will win the series. I think they have a great defense. I think their pitching is deeper, obviously, with the injuries to Cleveland. I like what Cleveland does with the bullpen and on the base paths, but I think there are more weapons that the Cubs have. But I'm going to be rooting for an ex-Expo, Terry Francona.
Always great talking to you every Monday after 6, Michael. We'll do it again in a week.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Kluber's going to start game one. Bauer and Tomlin will be games two and three. We're going to hold off as long as we can with Trevor just to get the most information we can. If it works out right, we'd like him to pitch second. It's going to be TBA after game three, probably the rest of the way. I mean, for obvious reasons, it's not that difficult to figure out. Kluber's certainly an option. It could be a lot of things. So we're just kind of keeping it open. I mean, we found out the last series that that's probably a good way to do it.
Now, obvious reasons. I don't know right now.
Damn drone. And how much am I going to have to use Andrew Miller in those first couple of games? Again, we have the series opener for you here on TSN 690 tomorrow night. We'll also have game 3 and game 5. And that's it.